This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, the draft will be here before we know it. We've got the combine coming up, all the individual workouts, all of that, and then we'll see what everybody's team looks like when it's all said and done. But I love the mock drafts that are out there, and we got a guy with us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline who's done a three-round mock draft. He's NFL Media's draft analyst. He is Chad Ryder. Chad, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's my time of year.
It is. Yeah. We love talking to all of you guys that do these mock drafts, because I assume there's a lot of work and they always change based on new information or workouts. But how many have you done to this point? Is this the first one?
Yeah. We don't do mock drafts on NFL.com until the underclassmen group is official. So I'll do a 4-round and then a 5-round and then a 7-round right before the draft.
Yeah, so it just seems like it's a lot of work, but you seem to love it, Chad, because I love asking the mock draft guys, like, right after the draft, like, when do you start next year's mock draft?
Yeah, well, it's a 12-month thing now, not necessarily mock drafts, but for some people, maybe, but for me, just studying players and trying to get to know them and put together information for our people on air, NFL Network, and for .com writing, things like that. So it's a labor of love. It's basically just a big puzzle, and you just try to do the best you can and think of interesting things that might happen and lay out a scenario, and hopefully people enjoy it.
What would you say your batting average is in the first round? I wouldn't hold you to the entire draft. That's a lot, but just first round projections throughout your history. Do you feel like you're batting .500, or you're doing better than that? What would you say?
I think, to be honest, I take a lot of chances that other people don't. I kind of fade the public on a lot of stuff, so I'm not in the, you won't see my name in the, top 10 drafts in terms of, getting players and teams kind of mixed up. But I enjoy more during the process, kind of trying to think ahead of what changes may be coming that people aren't thinking of. Like, for example, last year, a lot of people were saying Bijan Robinson and Anthony Richardson were like late first round picks. And I had them in the top 10, 12, off the bat, because I knew that the talent was there and those kind of guys tend to rise to the crop. So I kind of try to think of things like that. And by the time the draft rolls around, you're going to get your, what I try to do is try to get as many first round picks in the first round, not necessarily tied to the right teams, because a lot of luck involved in that too. But and as far as I know, Dane Brugler and myself over at The Athletic, I've never seen anybody have more than what he and I did 2 years ago when we had 30 out of the 32.
Nice.
And so, not with the Cook team, of course, that's almost impossible. But you do your best you can, and it's really, I don't look at it for that kind of thing. I try to have fun with it. I try to, like I said, think of scenarios that that other people are. And then we have guys like Daniel Jeremiah who are, talking to teams and, trying to do their best to project what teams are going to do. And I take a little bit of a different look at it just to be interesting.
Hey, Chad, I think you have 4 or 5 quarterbacks, and I heard somebody saying that, this is a really good year for quarterbacks, but also that, the whole thing with COVID and the extra year and everything is finally kind of evening out. Is that the way you see it? Do you think this is as good of a crop of quarterbacks as we've seen in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's a good group. There's question marks in them all, though. Like, every guy that comes out, we all have strengths and weaknesses and whatnot. But there's some really intriguing talents. And, in terms of the class as a whole, the extra year of eligibility that the NCAA gave these players is allowing them to stay in school a little bit longer. We got a lot of guys that are playing full 5 years and then maybe had a redshirt year for a 6th year. Michael Penix in Washington, for example, is a good example. There's a lot of guys like that. And then next year will be really, we'll get kind of back to normal in terms of the the size of the class, you know, after next year. So it'll kind of wind down a little bit with that, and we'll get to people. But yeah, only 54 underclassmen came into this class, partially because of all the seniors that have returned and partially because of NIL and other things like that. But in terms of quarterbacks, it's a good group, and you're going to see at least four go in the first round.
So in your mock here, where the Seahawks are sitting at 16, you've got them making a trade with Philadelphia, trading out of the first round.
Trading down
22. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And, you know, it's not a draft if John Schneider doesn't trade down at least once in the first round, right? I mean, Howie Roseman from Philadelphia moves up and John moves down. That's how it works. So I paired those two together in this particular trade, where Philadelphia would go and get their center of the future to replace Jason Kelce and Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. And Seattle moves down and gets a defensive tackle that they need and Johnny Newton out of Illinois. So I would expect that. Seattle's traded down twice in the first round, a couple of times in the past. And I wouldn't be shocked if they did that again either, to accumulate some later picks. And then, you know, the thing is, people don't think about this, but in the second and third round, Schneider will actually move up and get guys that they want, so they can accumulate picks later, use those picks to move up on day two, where maybe the value, some interesting value available there. So, yeah, I think Seattle will definitely be looking to trade down out of that 16 spot.
Yeah, it's interesting. So looking at Jerzon Newton, and I was looking at him today, Chad, and he kind of reminded me a little bit of Kalijah Kancey, who actually had a pretty good year for Tampa Bay. Yeah. But I know everybody talked about he was not the tallest guy in the world, and he had short arms and all that stuff. But tell us what you see about him and how you think he might fit in here, this defensive tackle.
Yeah, there are some guys that simply overwhelm their opponents with quickness off the snap and pure relentlessness. And I saw the same from Kancey. And, you know, you're not going to put Kancey or Oliver in the Aaron Donald, you know, tier, because that's not fair. But certainly Kancey's got that in. And Newton's a little bigger than Kancey, a little stronger at the point of attack. So I think he can handle, if Seattle continues to, you know, use a lot of multiple fronts, he can move around, play five technique, he play outside the tackle at times. And then, of course, the interior spots, and he can really have a good effect on their defense, depending on how things go under the new staff.
How much do you put into the combine versus what you have on tape on a player?
Well, I think the combine is really most, you know, 90% of it is confirming what you've already seen. But there are opportunities for guys to make people go back, including myself, make teams go back to the film a little bit and see, okay, maybe in this scheme they weren't asked to come off the edge as much as they potentially could. And so you can look at different situations like, okay, they didn't really get to use their athleticism here maybe as much as they could. It's sort of a tiebreaker as well, you know, because a lot of these guys – you want to, you know, everybody wants to rank these guys 1 to 100 receivers or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, there's tiers of talent where the fifth best receiver is not significantly different than the eighth best receiver. So you kind of use some tiebreakers in terms of not only like the numbers, but what you see on the field during the combine when they're all on the field at the same time doing the same drills. You can see their movement skills. You can see their consistency, the way they're catching the ball. These little things that when they're on the field next to each other is really helpful to evaluate, because, you know, as we know, schemes are all different for colleges. The talent surrounding players are all different for colleges. So, you know, you get these guys in this format where it's really, you're just looking at them and what they can do on an individual basis. So, I think the base is the film, obviously. But, you know, not all film is created. A lot of people will say, you know, it's all about the film. But the film can lie a little bit, or maybe mislead a little bit. It's not always true, because it doesn't tell the whole story of what a guy can really do.
So what are some of the other position groups, Chad, that you look at and go, okay, this one's pretty plentiful? Because we talked to somebody about, they had Jared Verse, I think Florida State, pass rusher, and he was saying in his opinion that there, it wasn't a great year for edge rushers. But what do you think, I mean, as far as other than quarterback, where is the best value as far as position goes?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this is a average to below average edge class. So you might see some teams, you know, making some moves to try to get those guys. Some of the stronger areas are cornerback. Should be a lot of corners taken day two, if not day one. Offensive tackle, pretty deep 1-2 class. Some guys sliding into the fourth round that maybe people aren't really thinking will at that point. Defensive tackles actually a little deeper than the last couple of years as well. And then receivers, again, another D2, a lot of second, third round guys that are going to end up stepping in and making immediate contributions to their new team.
Hey, so looking at the rest of your mock draft as it pertains to the Seahawks, you've got them picking up a second round pick in that trade with the Eagles, which they don't currently have. So in your mock, they've got a second round pick and they spend it, and this will make a lot of people happy out here. They spend it on Michael Penix Jr. Now, I'm curious where, if your opinion changed on him at all, because as Dave said, we've talked to a number of draft guys who, coming out of that game against Texas, the conversation was, oh my goodness, this guy looked ridiculous. And is he a top 10, a top 5 quarterback? Does he make it out of the top 10? And then after the Michigan national title game, it was, does he sneak into the bottom of the first round? Is he mid second round? And that's kind of where you have him at pick number 50. Did your opinion on him change, or has it remained the same regardless of what you saw in those two games?
Well, it's not as though my opinion changed, but the fact is that early in the year, nobody breathed on this guy, and when you don't get to him, he's clearly an accurate quarterback, and when he was just able to sit in that pocket and throw to some very talented receivers, he was dangerous. And in the second half of the year, teams got him off the spot a little bit. He had to make some plays on the run, and it. You know, he made some, and then it's just in Michigan, a team finally put some pressure on him. And given the injury history he has, it's, you know, when a guy plays with a brace on his leg full time, that's tough to ignore. We saw that with Carson Strong at Nevada, and he went undrafted. That's not going to happen with Penix, but you know, it wouldn't be shocking to me if he could go anywhere from late one to early four, depending on how his medical checks out. And that's really an important part of the combine that we don't really get to see. But teams get the medical reports from their doctors. He's going to go through a lot of different tests to see how his knee and shoulder and everything are. So I think the championship game just kind of was what most people thought would happen when he actually faced more pressure than what he had been able to do. And again, this is getting back to how college tape doesn't always, it can lie or mislead a little bit in terms of how they're going to project to the next level. But that, all that said, if a team can really protect this guy, he can get the ball out fast, he can get it out accurately, you know, he's worth that day two pick, you know, just given the risk. And a lot of times a second round pick isn't much different than a first round pick, except maybe there's a risk involved with taking him.
Hey, Chad, you know, after watching the Super Bowl, tight ends look pretty important. And there was somebody that had, again, we talked to a lot of mock draft guys and had the Seahawks taken Brock Bowers at number 16. And I was like, wow, I would be shocked if he fell that far. I'm just curious when you look at him, Chad. I mean, you have him going fifth to the Chargers. He really stood out. I got a chance to watch a good amount of him. He looked like a guy playing pro football. Is he one of the best tight ends you've seen in a while?
Yes, absolutely. And I honestly think the only reason that he could fall out of the top 10 is if the medical issues he had this year were more long-term. I don't anticipate that. I haven't heard that. So therefore, to me, he's potentially the second best player in this draft after Caleb Williams. I think he's got a chance to be really special. And with that position becoming more and more important, you got a guy with that agility, with the blocking ability, the strong hands. He can do a little bit. I mean, there's no reason that his, you know, his ceiling is like a Travis Kelce type difference maker. He's got a long way to go to fit there, but you have to think about when you're talking a top five pick, what is this guy could potentially be? And he's that kind of special player.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Chad, last one from me. What, as far as what the Seahawks have done in the last couple of years, been pretty impressed with, you know, especially picking Witherspoon at five. They didn't need a corner, really, and he turned out to be, I think, the defensive rookie of the year. But what about the job that they've done over the last couple of years here in Seattle?
John has done a great job there. Last year was very interesting because he spoke about this publicly, I believe, about how he changed his focus a little bit when evaluating players. And it was fairly obvious last year that he had done that, maybe a little bit the year before as well, in terms of really being taking solid players, maybe looking less at upside and maybe really like focusing on not only the talent, but the character, things like that. I think the last couple of years have been different than even what he had done before. And it's going to be a different dynamic this year without Coach Carroll there. And it'll be very interesting to see how things change in the way they evaluate and the way they make selections. Last couple of years, they've done a really good job, I think. And, for example, Abraham Lucas, I thought could have been a late first-round pick. I thought this air raid tackle nonsense was nonsense. Mm-hmm. And if he wouldn't have got hurt this year, I think he would have kept getting better and better. So I think they've done a really good job the last couple of years.
Hey, before we let you go, who in your mind is the most likely guy that we are going to see in the green room, and the camera keeps going to him because he was expected to go much sooner than he did? Every year there's that guy that they keep flashing to the green room, and is he going to get drafted here? Is he going to get picked here?
Yeah.
Is there a likely candidate as you see it?
Well, unfortunately it might be Penix, depending on how the medical reports come back. It depends on a guy like Jeremiah Trotter out of Clemson, who's a linebacker that maybe some people will think as a first round, but if he doesn't work out as well, he could be one of these guys that ends up a late second round pick despite his talent. It depends, like Bo Nix from Oregon, they might invite him, but he may not end up being a first round pick. Another guy is Latu from UCLA, really talented edge player. But he had the neck injury that forced him out of Washington, basically. And again, medical could cause him to drop a little bit further than his talent would indicate, too. So there's a few guys that could be in that unfortunate situation. You just hope that, like Aaron Rodgers and like others, they make the most of their opportunity once they get on the field.
NFL media draft analyst Chad Ryder has been our guest here with Wyman and Bob. Chad, thanks so much for the time. Great stuff, and we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys, for the invite.
Hear Wyman and Bob every afternoon, 2 to 7.